This morning, Green's List has for you three very knowledgeable and highly entertaining speakers who are going to talk to you about what we have somewhat optimistically described as a planning revolution. The new residential zones, which will be rolled out in Victoria as of the 1st of July. And we're going to take you through a three-part discussion originally. We're going to have Tom Vassilopoulos talk to us about the nuts and bolts and the features of the new zones. We'll then have Miguel Belmar and Sarah Porritt raising some practical issues about what the zones mean in terms of their implementation and operation. We'll then have a short break to refresh our caffeine levels and come back with an opportunity for you to test the knowledge of the panel with some questions and some provocations. So to start off with Tom Vassilopoulos, if I can introduce him to you. Tom comes to us via the Moonee Valley City Council, where effectively he did, as far as I can see, every job. He was the municipal building surveyor, the manager of statutory planning enforcement, and the manager of property services. He now practices in the bar generally in those areas and is a regular attendee down at VCAT in planning and other matters. So if I can ask Tom to come forward and tell you about what this is.
Thank you, Nick. But before I start on the residential zones, I thought I'll just provide an overview of all the reform zones and what's basically happening. So the proposal is to have the creation of five new zones, that is the residential growth zone, the general residential zone, neighbourhood residential zone, commercial one zone and commercial two zone. There'll be deletion of the existing zones, and that is the residential 1-3 zones, and the business 1-5 zones, and the priority development zones. There will be an amendment of 12 existing zones, and they're listed as you can see on the right-hand side. So you've got the low-density residential zone, mixed-use zone, township zone, and so on. And that's, in summary, all the reform zones and the proposals that are put forth. However, today we're going to be focusing on the residential zones, and I'll start by providing an overview of that. So the existing scheme, there are three main zones, residential zones, and as indicated, residential 1-3 zones. They'll be replaced by the residential growth zone, general residential zone, and the neighbourhood residential zone. There are also some changes proposed to the existing mixed-use zone, the township zone, and the low-density residential zone. And the reason for that is to align them with the features of the new residential zones. As well as that, the existing low-density residential zone is also proposed to be changed so that the land can be subdivided into lots having a minimum area of 2,000 square metres where sewerage is connected. Before I continue, just I've provided a link there, a website link, where you can obtain more information regarding all these zones. And I'm talking about the residential zones, commercial zones, business zones and industrial zones, and that's at that website at the bottom. So the first zone I'll start off with is the residential growth zone, also referred to as a go-go zone, and it's similar to the existing residential two zone. Now, the purpose of this zone is to provide housing at increased densities in buildings up to and including four storeys, to encourage a diversity of housing types in locations offering good access to services and transport, including activity areas, to encourage scale of developments that provides a transition between areas of intensive use and development and areas of restrictive housing growth, and to allow educational, recreational, religious and community and a limited range of non-residential uses to serve the local community needs in appropriate locations. So the likely applications of the residential growth zones will be in areas determined appropriate for increased growth and density, providing for medium density developments and increased housing activity in areas such as near activities areas and also near train stations. When we look through the actual residential growth zone, there are also some new as of right uses, and that's under clause 32.07 under table of uses, section 1. Now, as of right meaning no permit is required for the use. Some examples I've outlined there include food and drink premises, that is other than convenience, restaurant, hotel and tavern. Now, the food and drink premises are, as of right, on the proviso that the land must be located within 100 metres of a commercial zone or mixed use zone and must adjoin or have access to a road in a road zone. In addition, land must have the same street frontage as the land in the commercial zone or mixed use zone, and the leasable floor area must not exceed 100 square metres. So they're the as of right requirements for food and drink premises. Now, other new as of right uses also include the medical centres, and that is on the condition that the gross floor area of the buildings must not exceed 250 square metres. In addition, there are other new as of right uses which incorporate shops other than adult sex bookshop and bottle shop, and the conditions basically that the land must be located within 100 metres of a commercial zone or mixed use zone and must adjoin or have access to a road in a road zone. The land must have the same street frontage as the land in the commercial zone or mixed-use zone, and the leasable floor area must not exceed 100 square metres. That's similar to the other as-of-right uses as already stipulated. There have been also some amendments to the existing as-of-right uses. That is, when I say amendments, amendments to the equivalent residential two zoning. And some of these examples are place of worship, and the conditions for that is that the gross floor area of the buildings must not exceed 250 square metres. The existing residential two zone, the floor area currently states that it must not exceed 180, so it's been increased from 180 to 250. In addition, the condition with respect to the site adjoining or having access to a road zone remains. The condition under the existing residential two zone, which specifically states to not allow social or recreational activity, has been removed. Similarly, the condition under residential two zone for sites to not exceed 1,200 square metres has also been removed. The other as-of-right uses that have been amended include bed and breakfast uses. The main change there is that they've increased it from 6 people to 10 persons that may be accommodated away from their normal place of residence. In the residential growth zone, there are also some new permit required uses under clause 3207, and that's under section 2. Some of these examples are offices other than medical centre. The conditions for that are the land must be located within 100 metres of a commercial zone, the land must have the same street frontage as the land in the commercial zone, and the leasable floor area must not exceed 250 square metres. In addition, there's also new prohibited uses under clause 3207, and that's under section 3 of the table of uses. And the prohibited uses of the new ones are the adult sex bookshops and bottle shops. The threshold lot size remains the same. There's a permit trigger for construction or extension of a single dwelling to remain at 300 square metres. And the permit trigger for lots between 300 square metres and 500 square metres, where specified in the schedule to the zone, has been removed. So anything less than 300 square metres triggers a permit. Now, the Reds Code standards in clause 54 and clause 55 remain the same, and that can be specified in the schedule. One of the main changes, and this is to all residential zones, is the actual building height of a dwelling or residential building. Now, the maximum height of a building used for the purposes of a dwelling must not exceed the height specified in the schedule to the zone. So basically, councils have the opportunity to provide their own maximum heights in the schedule if they choose so. If no building height is specified in the actual schedule, then the maximum building height should not exceed 13.5 metres unless it's a sloping site whereby it could be extended to 14.5 metres. Now, I've highlighted should not exceed, meaning that it's supposedly or it's intended to be a discretionary height, 13.5 metres, and that's equivalent to a four-storey building. Now, the building height requirements replaces the maximum building height specified in standards A4 and standards B7, which is currently at 9 metres or 10 metres for sloping sites. So that was an overview of the residential growth zone. We can move on now to the general residential zones, and that's also known as the slow go zone, and it's similar to the existing residential one zones. Now, the purpose of this zone is to encourage development that respects the neighbourhood character of the area, to implement neighbourhood character policy and adopted neighbourhood character guidelines, to provide a diversity of housing types and moderate housing growth in locations offering good access to services and transport, to allow educational, recreational, religious, community and limited range of non-residential uses to serve local community needs in appropriate locations. Now, the likely application of this zone will be in areas, or in most residential areas, where moderate growth and diversity of housing will occur consistent with existing neighbourhood character. The table of uses under this zone is similar to the zones that I've just mentioned for the residential growth zone. They're identical, so the new as of right requirements and all the other changes are identical, so I won't go over them again. Now, with regards to threshold lot size, that remains the same as the current residential one zone. That is, a permit is required to construct or extend one dwelling on a lot of less than 300 square metres, or on a lot between 300 square metres and 500 square metres, if specified in the schedule. The res code standards remain the same, and they can be specified under schedule. With regards to the maximum building height for dwellings or residential buildings, again, that the maximum building height used for the purpose of a dwelling must not exceed the building height specified in the schedule. Again, council has the option of specifying a maximum height, if it chooses to do so, of their own choice in the actual schedule. If no building height is specified, the requirements set out in the relevant standards will apply, and that is the standard 9 metre height or 10 metres for sloping sites. Now, the third residential zone I'll talk about is neighbourhood residential zone, and that's the no-no zone, and that's similar to the existing residential three zone. Now, this is probably the most stringent residential zone, meaning there's less development can occur. The purpose is to recognise areas of predominantly single or double-storey residential development. It's to limit opportunities for increased residential development, to manage and ensure that development respects the identified neighbourhood character, heritage, environmental or landscape characteristics, to implement neighbourhood character policy and adopted neighbourhood character guidelines, and to allow educational, recreational, religious, community and limited range of other non-residential uses to serve local community need in appropriate locations. So the existing purpose under the residential three zone, which basically stated to provide for residential development a range of densities with a variety of dwellings to meet housing needs, that's been removed, or will be removed. The likely application of this zone will be in areas where single dwellings prevail and change is not identified, such as areas of recognised neighbourhood character, heritage, environmental or landscape significance. There's also some new as-of-right uses in this zone, and stated as some examples are there. I've got medical centre, providing the graceful area of the buildings must not exceed 250 square metres. Must be located in existing buildings. That's pretty interesting. You can't just go and build a new centre, a medical centre in one of these zones. Has to be located in an existing building. The site must adjoin or have access to a road zone and must meet the car parking requirements. It says must meet them, so I'm assuming it's what's intended there. I want to ensure that all the car parking requirements are met under clause 5206. Other as-of-right uses have been amended under this zone include the following, and that's place of worship. On the conditions for that are that the gross floor area of the buildings must not exceed 250 square metres. Again, that's been increased from 180 square metres as is currently in the residential three zone. The site must also join or have access to a road in a road zone. Now, I've just put a note there. The existing residential three zone basically states one of the conditions is that to not allow social or recreational activities. That's been removed, and the other condition specifically relating to the site area of 12,000 square metres has also been removed. Now, other as-of-right uses have been amended, include bed and breakfast, similar to the ones that I've mentioned in the other zones. It's been increased from 6 people to 10 people, maybe accommodated, away from their normal place of residence. There's a new prohibited use, and that's a sale yard, and there's also a minimum lot size that's been included for subdivisions, a new requirement to allow schedule to this zone to specify a minimum lot size to subdivide land. So councils have the opportunity to provide a minimum requirement for lot sizes. There's also a new requirement for the number of dwellings on a lot. The number of dwellings on a lot must not exceed the number specified in the schedule. Now that's up to council. They may choose it to be two or less than two or more than two units. If no number is specified, then the number of dwellings on a lot must not exceed two. The threshold lot size, that's pretty similar. It's remained the same. Permits triggered if the lot is less than 300 square metres, or a lot less than the lot size specified in the schedule. If that is, if council chooses to specify whatever minimum threshold they require for lot sizes in the schedule. The existing threshold trigger under residential 3 zone, which states a lot between 300 square metres and 500 square metres, has been removed. The res code standards, again, remain the same. That can be specified in the schedule. Interestingly, the maximum building height for neighbourhood residential zone is a little different to the other zones as mentioned. Council will have the opportunity to specify a maximum building height in the schedule if it chooses to do so, which cannot be exceeded. However, if no building height is specified, the height of a building must not exceed 8 metres, or 9 metres if it's a sloping site. And I've highlighted must, meaning that that is the maximum, that's what the intention is, rather than discretionary height as specified in the other two residential zones. This one here is a mandatory height limit. So in summary, the key changes for the residential growth zones include the following: a planning permit threshold to construct or extend one dwelling on a lot of less than 300 square metres, encourage up to 4-storey residential developments by setting discretionary height limit of 13.5 metres, allowing a local maximum building height that can be specified in a schedule to the zone that cannot be exceeded, limiting restrictions on residential land uses such as place of worship, medical centre, food and drink premises and shop, allowing small-scale commercial uses such as food and drink premises and shop within 100 metres of a commercial area or a mixed-use area. The changes specifically to general residential zone is to encourage a range of building scales through a discretionary height limit of 9 metres for residential development, except where specified in the schedule to the zone, and it's a different height to the 9 metres. There's also inclusion of local maximum building height that can be specified in the schedule to the zone that cannot be exceeded, a planning permit threshold to construct one dwelling on a lot of 300 square metres, but allowing a council to specify a different threshold of 500 square metres, restrictions of non-residential land use, such as places of worship and medical centre, and allowing small-scale commercial uses, such as a shop or food drink premises, subject to a permit. And the most stringent, residential zone is the neighbourhood residential zone, and the summary there is allowing a minimum lot size for subdivisions to be specified, allowing a maximum of two dwellings on a lot, with the ability for councils to vary this limit through a schedule to the zone. So the minimum, as indicated earlier, can be less than two or could be more than two dwellings. A planning permit threshold to construct or extend one dwelling on a lot of 300 square metres, but allowing a council to specify a different threshold. Encouraging single or two-storey residential development with a maximum building height limit of 8 metres that cannot be exceeded by a permit, except where specified differently in the schedule to the zone. And a local maximum building height that can be specified in the schedule to the zone that cannot be exceeded. The restrictions of non-residential land uses such as place of worship, medical centre and convenience shop. So that is basically what I had to say, and I'll just leave it on the next slide.
Thanks, Tom. Well, hopefully you're getting some of the flavour of what's about to occur, and it seems to me that in general terms, perhaps we've been a bit misleading in describing this as being a planning revolution. It's perhaps more of a devolution, going backwards to the, in some people's views, good old days, in some people's views, bad old days of more prescriptive planning, where there's rules and mandatory height limits and lot sizes, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll talk more about that later, but I'd like to introduce to you now Miguel Belmar. Now, Miguel is, again, a barrister on Green's List who has a varied commercial practice, but with a focus on planning and environment work. He's appeared in a number of very significant cases, including the very memorably named Winky Pop cases. And his favourite colour is green. He enjoys long walks on the beach and romantic dinners, and I'd like to have him come forward to talk to you a bit more about this.
Thank you for that introduction. It's very early in the morning, and hopefully we've all had coffee or something to get you going. Now, what I wanted to talk about was really just bring this back to some practical issues that I think these new zones give rise to, and it's really the sort of things that I think we're thinking about at the bar, that you're thinking about and the clients might be concerned about. And when you read the zones and when you read the purposes of the new zones, it all sounds like not too much is going to change. But I think it's interesting to think about this in the context of the government policy and what is potentially the message that's being sold to the community as opposed to what is appearing in the zones. And if you consider the media release that accompanied these new zones on the 5th of March of this year, I think it's quite telling in some of the strength of the language used. And if I can just take you to some of the issues from that media release, which were as follows. After a detailed consultation process with over 2,000 submissions from individuals, businesses, councils and community groups, the Coalition Government will now establish the three reformed residential zones on 1 July this year. A key feature will be the new neighbourhood residential zone, which will be the strictest planning zone in Australia, aimed at protecting existing suburbs and then in neighbourhood character. And it goes on, these reforms will protect what Melburnians love about Melbourne, our streetscapes, our amenity, our livability, which are too valuable to ignore. Now, that's the message being the political message, and you contrast that with what the zones seem to be saying in their purpose. And from my, or the perspective I want to share with you this morning, is that there's something incongruous about those two things. And in particular, when you look at the neighbourhood residential zone, which is really the one that, from my perspective, is one that may impact many of us, because a lot of the development that's been occurring recently that many of us have been working on has been development of greater than four stories in what are the neighbourhoods within 10 to 15 kilometres of Melbourne. So we're talking about councils like Stonington, Boroondara, the city of Yarra. And they're the areas in which, for the last 10 years, the planning orthodoxy has been that that's where development should be occurring, because we're close to public transport, we're close to facilities. We're now faced with a situation where the planning schemes seem to be telling us that, in fact, the parts of Melbourne that that we love and have this great neighbourhood character, in fact, now need to be protected to such an extent that the height limits are going to be, as Tom was telling us, it looks like two stories. So what does this mean in reality for people that we are advising who are, for example, thinking about developing in an area that may end up being zoned as neighbourhood residential zone? What's the advice that we can be giving clients who are thinking about maybe this weekend or next weekend or later this year buying a property that's a potential development site in one of the suburbs that looks like it's going to end up covered by much of the neighbourhood residential zone, which is, as Tom is telling us, is now is referred to as a no-go zone. And I think that if you crystal ball about what we can be telling people, is that they have to be very careful, because there will be a 12-month implementation phase as to these new zones. And one of the underlying questions in all of this is, well, what will this mean in practical terms to developers who are trying to think about where their opportunities might be and the plans they might have had already in the pipeline for multi-storey development within these inner ring suburbs. It seems to me that there has to be, realistically, question marks about whether they go forward immediately, whether they hold back and see how it's going to play out. Potentially it means that people have to move faster than they would otherwise. But what I think what it really means is that if you're acting for clients who are holding land, who are thinking about doing development in these inner ring suburbs where they want to do greater than three or four stories, they really need to be getting advice immediately about how quickly they move. Certainly in the outlying suburbs, which you'd think many of those are going to end up in the residential growth zones, and these days we're seeing lots of clients who are doing multi-storey developments in places you'd never think of. Noble Park, Dandenong, places 20 kilometres plus out from the CBD, they seem to be the areas in which the zones that are going to encourage growth, they're going to be the ones that are going to keep encouraging that growth. But really the inner ring suburbs, we're going to end up with a much lower scale of development. And I mean, when I consider some of the cases I've been involved in residential streets in places like the Bayside or the city of Port Phillip, if these new zones come in, those sorts of five or six storey buildings, it looks like it's curtains for that era of development in Melbourne for the time being. Certainly, as Tom described, there will be some discretionary height limits in the outer lying areas, but if you consider that it's only within recent memory that we were talking about Mitcham Towers and 10 storeys a few hundred metres from Mitcham train station, it is really a revolution in multi-storey development. Certainly the biggest one we've seen in the generation that that we represent in terms of our experience at the bar. Now, that's perhaps the opportunities for advice to clients in relation to how developers are thinking. The other side of the picture is, of course, that it will provide, or it is intended to provide, greater security for mums and dads. So if you are owning a property or you're looking at purchasing a property in what is likely to end up within the neighbourhood residential zone, you can be going in there now potentially with greater security that you are not going to end up with five or six stories in your backyard in the knockdown property that's diagonally opposite where you want to build your pool. So when there's two sides to every story, and that's potentially the security that this government was seeking to provide for people in the inner ring suburbs. And when you read the purpose of the residential zone, it looks like that's what it's aiming that it will ultimately do. Now, certainly, all of these things are, as we know, open to debate. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out at VCAT and how, through the skills of town planners and maybe even some of the barristers, how these words ultimately end up being interpreted. We've all been in the tribunal and seen a phrase like to limit opportunities for increased residential development at the end of a hearing. That ends up meaning, no, it actually means the reverse. It actually means that we have to increase opportunities for residential development. Planning schemes are documents that are notoriously difficult to interpret. And I think the message I want to leave you with is that in the current climate, clients need to be very careful about how they are approaching development opportunities. If they are holding land within the inner ring suburbs that look like they're going to end up in the neighbourhood residential zone, they need to be getting advice now about making applications or what is potentially going to happen to their applications. It looks like they have 12 months within which these new zones are going to come in. And in the outlying suburbs, they may be within the opportunities they were intended to exist for multi-storey development. And again, they should be seeking advice about what greater opportunities there may be out there. And the last point would be that individuals, for families that are seeking to purchase within the inner ring suburbs, and they're concerned because there's a knockdown property next door or there's a knockdown property three doors away, well, again, they need to be getting advice about what that means to them and the investment they're making in their family home. So I think there's the new zones are going to provide opportunities for some developers, but they're also going to restrict some of the others. So I just want to leave you with those thoughts and what they mean to our practices. And really, I think it's time to review some of the files we're holding and see what things we need to get moving faster than we might have otherwise. So thank you.
Our next speaker is Sarah Porritt. Sarah's been at the bar for in excess of 12 years now. She's been a sessional member of Planning Panels Victoria. She's been a member of the Victorian Casino and Gaming Authority, and she literally wrote the book on planning. She's a co-author of the Butterworth's Loose Leaf Service. And she's going to give you some information, firstly about the implementation of the new zones and then some more interesting tidbits and information.
Thanks, Nick. I'm really going to talk about, and in some ways this is a bit of a parallel with some of the things Miguel has said, about the implementation and what it means from here. For a revolution, it's pretty safe to say this is a revolution on a pretty slow burn. What this means right now is not very much. Not much is changing, and it probably won't for a while. What we've got right now is nothing. What we will have by June of 2013 is three extra zones sitting in what they call the Victoria planning provisions, they're sitting in the planning schemes for councils to pick which of those zones they're going to apply to what. So as at June 2013, probably still not a lot of change. What might be more interesting and might bring us some slightly quicker change is those zones that are being amended. So I don't know how well you can read what's up there, but we've got the three new zones, the slow go, the no go, and the sort of go at a nice steady pace zones. But between the ones on the end are all called improved zones. Now, what you'd expect in terms of implementation is that they're going to come in immediately. So we're more likely to see some rapid change for the areas that are in the mixed-use zones and the low-density residential zones. Some of the changes in there are quite interesting, and obviously we haven't had time to go through all of them, but the low-density residential zone changes something that's been a sort of tenet of planning law for as long as I can remember, which is in a low-density zone, you don't get to subdivide under 0.4 hectares. That's been changed to 0.2 hectares. And that will be a big change for people who hold land in those areas. You would expect to see quite a lot of people who are very interested in that. The word on the street is that there are a lot of councils who are seriously unimpressed. By that, it is a big change, and whether or not that's going to come in with some sort of schedule that allows some of the councils to opt in or out of those changes, or whether you might see a bit of movement on that front, it's probably not unlikely that you will, or even a transitioning phase in terms of some of those subdivisions. That, I should say, is largely speculation, but it wouldn't be entirely surprising. In terms of the substantive residential zones, what the present implementation plan suggests is that if councils do nothing, so they don't say where they're going to actually apply these zones to, they're all going to go into the medium zone, the general residential zone. So in a sense, that would be a little bit of a disappointment for a revolution, because it means that everything's going to go. Most things are in residential one now. They're all going to go into the general zone, and we're probably not going to be anything much the wiser as to what they're going to do. You would expect, though, some councils are going to take this up and really enjoy the ability to be prescriptive. It seems not unlikely that there will be some councils that are very keen to implement particularly the slow growth zones and to try and protect some of those areas that they're keen to see very little development in. There will be others that are also keen to really set a development pace and want to implement those. But it's really not until we know what the councils are going to do that we're going to know how and indeed if this is going to affect the lie of the land. What that means in terms of our practices and what's going to come before us is that you'd expect to see some clients coming in wanting advice about that sort of change process. The way you'd expect to see the zones implemented is there's probably two options, or three. The councils are either going to do nothing, in which case they'll all go into the general residential zone, or there's going to be a public planning process, which is the way you probably expect most of this to happen, that they'll put up amendments, there'll probably be panel hearings, and that will see the real change to exactly where these are going to play out. So that's something you might find people coming in wanting to know, well, how can they be involved in that process? Alternatively, in terms of what Miguel was saying, might well be that I'm sure that there are plenty of clients out there looking pretty closely at how they can be involved in those processes. So that's something that might happen and might be fairly interesting to be involved in. There's also a prospect, although, again, this is realms of speculation, so I can't find anything that actually says this, that where you've got councils that have been involved in strategic reviews already, so the idea of a slow growth zone, a medium growth zone, and a more of a go-go zone is not new. There's been similar sorts of things in terms of neighbourhood character overlays in the areas that are not supposed to change for a long time. It's been around for a while. People have known this is coming in. Those councils which have already done that strategic work might find they're in a position to translate that into the adoption of these zones without going through a public process. It might be that the minister would be prepared to adopt where those zones are going to be through what's called a 20 part 4 or a 20 subsection 4 process and simply implement them into the scheme. But we don't know that, and it's something that we're presumably going to find out in the 12 months following 2013. In terms of likely areas of debate, what this will do to some degree is change the nature of the debate that we're having primarily at the tribunal. There's no doubt that there's going to be plenty of fights to be had about the drafting of these new zones. There are a number of things that don't seem particularly clear, whether all of those get picked up before they're eventually implemented. Probably not. There's always room for those sort of debates. And they come about every time they change the zones or do something to the planning scheme. The other is that this will change the nature of the way planning is implemented to some degree. The way we're used to looking at planning schemes is we've got pretty general and generic zones. Then you have to look at what's called the municipal strategic statement for the strategic intent. So you've got your zone. Then you're looking at this strategic statement and saying, look, is this supposed to be an area where you'd expect change? Is it supposed to be an area where you don't expect change? Now we've got two areas that are both prescribing the rate of change. So you've got the zones giving you one message, and ideally that's going to be completely consistent with what's in the municipal strategic statement. So your policy statement is going to be completely consistent with the zones that have been implemented. Practice tells us that that might not quite be the case, and you can see some pretty interesting debates that are going to happen where the council has said, well, we've put our go-go area in this area, but our municipal strategic statement actually says that we want increased residential zoning or increased residential densities around activity centres, but that's not exactly the same as what we did when we implemented the zones. So you've now got two strategic or two drivers of as to how where you're going to want those change areas. So it'll be interesting. I suspect there's going to be a fair ground for debate if they're not perfectly managed, and for the most part they're usually not perfectly managed. So while to some degree this gives us a theoretically more certain way of understanding where growth is expected and those areas where it's not expected, you'd expect to see some pretty lively debate and possibly some pretty lively panel hearings, but none of those particularly soon. It's probably a good place to leave it for a break and some questions.
It always surprises me when you have this revolution and an introduction of new laws, the fairly obvious problems with the drafting of some of the new zones, whether it's a new piece of legislation or a new planning zone. And I just want to give you an example of one. In the neighbourhood, the residential growth zone. So this is the zone which is being said, this is our counterpoint to the no-go zone, this is where we're going to encourage development. One of the express purposes of this zone is to provide housing at increased densities, but in buildings up to and including four-storey buildings. Now that says pretty clearly, you can't have a building of over four storeys. You've then got a default mandatory height limit, which says you can only have 13.5 metres, which is pretty odd because it's too high for a four-storey building on one view, but too low for a five-storey building. But in any event, unless you specify in the schedule to the zone something above that, you're only going to be able to get four storeys. But what if you want to specify in the schedule to the zone a height greater than that? How does that work when you've got a height limit that allows a five-storey building and an express purpose of the zone that says up to and including four-storey buildings? It's also very odd that in that context of that, they've also got application requirements and decision guidelines that refer to, for residential development of four or more storeys, you've got to do this, or a decision guideline for a development of four or more storeys, excluding a basement, have regard to these things. Well, you can't have more than four storeys. So there's that. That's one example of some very odd things that appear when you examine these zones closely. And perhaps we'll talk a bit more about some of the more oddities for those of you who want to stick around after you've had another coffee and break. So have a break, get up, stretch your legs, come back in 5 minutes. Thanks very much.